from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, Boston Herald columnist Jason Mastrodonato. No one better to break down the Red Sox with. The Red Sox singing a lot of Tom Petty tunes because they are free-falling down the standings, really struggling. And Jason thinks this next stretch for them is it. If they don't get it together, they won't make the playoffs. And that brings us to this. This team was in playoff position right up until the trade deadline when Chaim Bloom really didn't do much. Did he let the team down? Did he send them the wrong message? And also, is he creating a false choice between building the sustainable organization he wants and helping this team this year? And speaking of this team this year, they obviously believed in what they were doing. They bought into manager Alex Cora. They believed, but it seems like it's apparent to them the front office didn't believe in them, and that has been demoralizing. Also, Chris Sale is about to come back. Saturday, he will make his triumphant return after he's missed 2 years with Tommy John. And Ellen, this kind of reminds me of Star Wars because Jason said that Chris Sale is their only hope. And immediately I think of Princess Leia in the beginning of Star Wars and Obi-Wan Kenobi, help me. You're my only hope.
The only thing I know about Star Wars is whatever was parodied on Spaceballs because I've never seen Star Wars.
I can't. So you've never seen a single Star Wars movie?
I've seen I know it's been on TV while I've been in the room, but I've never sat down and watched a Star Wars ever. I've been to Star Wars in Disney, their little little area there, but no. Am I? You know what? My life is just fine.
Oh no, it's not. You're missing out. This is a huge pop culture touchstone that you're missing out on.
I miss the wave. It's one of those things. There's a few things on my list that I've always been I'll never have enough time to watch Game of Thrones, for example, or go back and watch this. What's done is done. And then COVID happened, and I did in fact have time to watch these things, and I still chose not to. So it's never going to happen.
Well, I mean, I hope you at least get the reference though when it comes to Chris Sale.
I know Princess Leia.
Okay. If Chris Sale took the mound with a lightsaber, would you know?
I don't even know what a lightsaber
is.
Okay,
I'm just trying to I just want to know where you're at.
Yeah, I know enough. I know
Star
enough
Wars.
To get along, you know, in life, but I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Chris Sale is the Jedi Knight coming to save the day for the Red Sox. Otherwise, they're in big trouble, and they'll be in big trouble as the evil empire and the Death Star that is the New York Yankees crushes them.
Yes. 1,000%. Yeah. Totally agree.
And speaking of agreement, Jason and I are in agreement that Chaim Bloom could be on a little bit of a hot seat, not for his job, but just in terms of criticism, if this team doesn't make the playoffs based on what he didn't do at the trade deadline. So that and more is coming up next with Jason Mastrodonato.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, as promised, we're now joined by Jason Mastrodonato of the Boston Herald. He's going to help us break down the free-falling Boston Red Sox. Jason, how you doing today?
Hey, man, it's good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, too. It's been a while. It's been a while. Jason and I go back a little bit, so it's very nice to see him, and he certainly had a meteoric rise at the Herald. You're a columnist, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I don't know if I'd call it meteoric, but I am a columnist. So unfortunately, people have to read my opinions now.
They're very good. They're very good. And nobody better to talk Red Sox with because you're still around the team, obviously, so, so much. So let's just sort of dig in here. As I mentioned, they're free falling going into this series with the Tampa Bay Rays, which is a huge series for them. Losers of 9 of 11. If you had to just pinpoint sort of one thing that has gone wrong for them, what would it be?
I mean, it's almost definitely been the offense and just the general lack of energy. But I think that starts with the offense. Sunday not included, right? I mean, Sunday was the first time we saw them actually have a good, solid, fundamentally sound offensive approach where they were just trying to hit singles, taking what the pitchers were giving them, yada, yada, yada. A little league coach would have been proud. They had 13 singles on Sunday, the most the most singles the Red Sox have had since 2017. So that was a good sign. But if you look at the 11 games, 10 games previous to that, and even Alex Cora says it's been more than that. He thinks it's been over a month that the offense has really not been right, where it's just a lot of free swingers. It's a lot of guys trying to hit homers. And listen, they got guys on this team that can hit homers, right? You know, like 6, 7, 8 guys you could say really power is a big part of their game.
Yes.
But that's not what they want. They want a more consistent, let's keep the line moving approach, actually make contact. They've been terrible at making contact. They rank second to last since the All-Star break in contact percentage. So just too much swing and miss, too much all or nothing approach, not a good offensive approach for the most part. And that's killed them because they've just had no energy.
That's an interesting point, because I'll be honest, you surprised me a little bit when you went with the offense, but you make such a strong case. And when you look at offensively what their struggles have been and Alex Cora, where he's been before and when he first came here to the Red Sox, one of the big things was, OK, we want guys who make contact, put the ball in play, make other teams make outs. They were doing that earlier in the year. So Is their lineup just built to be more swing and miss than we thought? Is it an approach issue? Has the league adjusted to them? Are guys just in slumps? Because that stat you gave was staggering. I didn't realize that they're second in Major League Baseball since the All-Star break in, contact rate, bad contact rate, Not making contact, essentially. Where's that coming from?
Yeah, it's hard to say because Cora pinpoints it. He says the Oakland series, which was like July 2nd. And what was going on at that point? I don't know. They were in first place. They were playing really well. I don't know. It's so hard to understand where that comes from. Was it like one player who kind of started swinging for the fences and then everybody else started doing it? I think sometimes teams just get too confident. We've seen teams before where there's just so much confidence that they feel like they can afford to go up there hunting pitches because they feel like they have a good plan and things are going well for them. And everything was going well for them for a few months. It could certainly just be a case of overconfidence. It could be a case of guys coming back to earth, right? I mean, For a while, Hunter Renfroe looked like he was having a career year. He's kind of come back to earth, especially against right-handed pitching, which statistically has always been pretty bad against right-handed pitching. JD Martinez looked really good early in the year. He's quietly been in a slump over a month. He has not been hitting well. Alex Verdugo has not been hitting well. He had the hamstring injury. It seems like his approach has just totally changed. I think it can start with one or two guys who just aren't playing very well or come back to earth and, other guys are overconfident. It's so hard to tell, but that's the big picture. What we're seeing is just a team that lost energy, is swinging and missing way too much, does not have trust in one another in the lineup to pass it from one guy to the next. And every guy is trying to hit a 7-run home run.
Yeah. And that can happen obviously when you're losing. So let me ask you this question then, because the offense up until the point you're mentioning was very good. Was that masking some other weaknesses on this team, the offense? And now when you take the offense away, do we see maybe, the starting pitching's not as good as we thought? I think we all sort of thought that they were overachieving relative to some of the names in that rotation and the relative lack of consistency from Eduardo Rodriguez. But when you take away the production of the offense, does that expose some weaknesses that maybe we just didn't realize were there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the starting rotation, listen, I picked this team to win 74 games, so I was clearly wrong. I thought they were going to be terrible. But the reason I thought they were going to be terrible was because of the starting rotation. There's just too many injury concerns, guys coming off years where they didn't pitch at all, guys coming off years where, like Garrett Richards' case, hardly ever throws any innings. Nathan Eovaldi's injured every other year. You just didn't expect them to be consistent or healthy. And in March and April, they were. They had an ERA under 4 in March and April. Well, the rotation's ERA went up a little bit in May. They had a 4.5 ERA in May. All of a sudden, you get to June, they have a 5.5 ERA in the starting rotation, and we didn't know it because they kept winning anyways. So it's a great point that the offense was masking some issues. We've seen the starting rotation also come back to earth, right, where Garrett Richards obviously has become basically useless since the sticky stuff crackdown. I mean, He gives them innings, so he's not totally useless, but useless in the sense of they're not quality innings. Nick Pivetta has looked more like he looked when he was with the Phillies. Eduardo Rodriguez looks better, but the numbers are still not good. He's still getting hit pretty hard. So I think it's covered up the rotation issues. We've seen even Matt Barnes and Adam Ottavino since the sticky stuff crackdown have not been great. Still good, but not great. So they've had some holes in their team that have certainly been exposed now that they're not scoring seven runs a game.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that even when they were in first place, they were still 20th in Major League Baseball in starters ERA, which is not great. I mean, you know, now you're talking about you're in the bottom third of baseball, but what could you say? They were a 600 winning percentage team. You couldn't criticize it, and they were getting all these quote-unquote quality starts, which, you know, if you ask me, the definition of quality start for baseball is an oxymoron, because that to me is not a quality start, but it is what it is. But now since the All-Star break, Jason, the starting pitching ERA is 5.43, 26th in Major League Baseball. It's hard to win very much with that.
It is, yeah. And we saw the bullpen look pretty good early
in
the year.
Yeah,
and
they're overtaxed at this point.
Exactly. You know, we every year a bullpen is good, you can just look at the starting rotation and say, how many innings are they throwing? Almost always, if the starting rotation is giving you innings, the bullpen's better because you can line up your bullpen so much easier. I mean, it's not hard to understand, but basically, now that they have to bring their A relievers and B relievers in the game in the fifth inning and the sixth inning, well, now who are using the seventh and the eighth inning? And they have been short. Like, Sawamura was really good for them, and now he's hurt. And it's pretty scary to watch him come off the mound the other day, threw seven pitches, leaves the game, elbow tightness. Who knows if he's going to be back? You know, Josh Taylor's kind of come back down to earth after his great scoreless stretch. So it's really exposed the bullpen a little bit, too. And it's not that the bullpen's bad. I still think the bullpen is perfectly adequate. I wasn't necessarily thinking they had to get a reliever at the trade deadline. I thought they were going to get a starter to patch up the starting rotation issues, which I think lead to the bullpen issues. And now all of a sudden we have a team that's not doing anything well.
It's a great point. I mean, they're really struggling. And you hit on it. That's where I want to go, because whether it's just a coincidence or it's happening concurrently, it seems like you can trace a lot of the issues this team is having back to the trade deadline and the relative inactivity from Chief Baseball Officer Chaim Bloom. Now, in fairness, he does make a trade for Kyle Schwarber, who's hurt. We haven't seen him yet. I guess the plan is for him to play first base, even though I believe he has one career game at that position.
Yeah,
one inning. Wow, that's even,
Zero outs recorded. He was just brought in. He was brought in from the outfield to play first base with five men in the infield.
Oh, so this was a Joe Maddon special.
Yeah.
So this wasn't really even playing first base for real.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that. So basically it's fair to say he's literally never played the position.
Exactly. I mean, never. Yeah.
And so that's supposed to be one fix, but you know, in fairness, we have to say he did do something. It's not nothing, even though I feel like it's literally not nothing. Metaphorically, I feel like it's nothing, Jason.
Right.
And then he goes out against arsonist Robles, who is just terrible. And he almost started a fight up in Toronto. I mean, he was better at starting a fight or trying to start a fight than he was at trying to get batters out. They bring in Austin Davis, who's not much, and they have a lot of eggs in the Chris Sale basket. So I'm just going to ask the point blank question here. Did Chaim Bloom let this team down?
I think so. I do. And, you know, I think you look at it and you can chalk it up to maybe, okay, rookie GM has never been a buyer before at the trade deadline, maybe misread the market, maybe looked at it and said, hey, we're in first place here. There's some big names being floated around, and Max Scherzer and Trey Turner and Jose Barrios. And, you know, the Rockies for a while looked like they were going to sell off. Maybe we'll be patient. We'll see what happens here. We'll let the big fish go. We're not going to be in on the big fish, right? Like we only have, if you're the Red Sox, you're looking at it, we have three top 100 prospects at our disposal. One of them's in the big leagues. It's Jaron Duran, and he's helping us right now. We're probably not going to trade him. The other one's Marcelo Meyer. We just drafted him. We're not going to trade him. And the other one's Tristan Casas, who plays first base, which is arguably our most important position of need.
Yeah.
We're not going to trade him. So when you're not in the top tier group, you're not looking at the Scherzers because you're not giving up those guys. You don't have enough of them. You move yourself into kind of the second tier group. And now you have to read the market. Where's the market going? And to me, it looks like they just misread the market because I probably didn't expect the Yankees and the Blue Jays to be as aggressive as they were. The Yankees were losing a lot leading up to the trade deadline, and they had some key injuries, and it looked like the Yankees were not going to be buyers. But I mean, Brian Cashman's not going to give up on a $200 million team. He's got Garrett Cole, who's still pitching phenomenal. He's not going to give up on this team. I also think there was a conscious effort from American League East clubs to say, you know what, this Red Sox team is catchable.
Yes.
They aren't that good.
Yes. So I agree with you. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to say, I thought just as telling at the deadline as the relative inactivity from Chaim Bloom was the activity of the Jays and the Yankees basically saying, this Red Sox team is flawed. We think we can chase him down. That was telling to me. And it sort of said to me that those other teams didn't really believe in the Red Sox, thought they were playing over their head. And with Heim's relative inactivity, I wonder, it's almost like he felt the same way.
Exactly. And it's either that, that's one certainly one explanation, is he felt the same way. And so did John Henry. You know, John Henry's a numbers guy. Maybe they looked at it and said, we're actually not that good. Let's not spend money, because they could have just as well gone out and spent money and not spent prospects, which is what I thought they were going to do.
Okay.
Because they were under the salary cap threshold last year. So they reset. So they could have just gone out and spent money, picked up some contracts, and the only penalty would have been paying money and paying a 20% tax on anything over the threshold. There would have been no strategical penalties on them this year. They didn't want to do that because they could have got Chris Bryant, who basically was given away for nothing. The Giants got him for like low level prospects, just because they took on a salary. There were guys like that who they could have just taken on salary before. So that's one logical explanation. Maybe they just didn't think they were that good either. I have a hard time believing that, because I think Alex Cora is so involved in the roster management of this club. It's not just Chaim Bloom. I mean, look at the offseason additions. You know, Marwin Gonzalez and Kike Hernandez are two of Alex Cora's favorite players. There's a reason why they're here on the Red Sox. Cora is involved in this too. So I'm guessing Cora was saying, here's what we need, please get us help. And Bloom looked at it and said, let's try, without mortgaging too much of the future, and just misread the market and kind of got caught with his pants down a little bit.
Yeah. So here's my question. Like, I look at somebody like, because people have said, okay, you know, look, the Jays gave up a lot for Berríos, and you're right about Scherzer and Turner, even though that's Heim's former boss, Andrew Friedman in LA, and that's sort of the GM I think all of us are hoping that Heim will become, melding the best of the small market race philosophy and ideology with the resources of a big market team. And I still think he'll be that guy eventually. But how about a guy like Kyle Gibson? I mean, he's had two pretty strong starts for the Phillies. He's not a world beater, but he's having a solid year. He can give you innings. He's an upgrade. He's a patch job for a rotation that needed it. I just don't understand why you don't bring in a guy like that. And in my mind, Jason, I think we've reached a little bit of a tipping point in baseball. And when I listen to Bloom talk and some of these other GMs, I think prospects have actually become overvalued. I think there was a point where they were undervalued, and now people are overvaluing them. How many of these prospects actually make it to the majors? And of the ones that do, you know, every time there's a trade deadline, you hear about, oh, you don't want to give up Jeff Bagwell, or you don't want to be the White Sox and give up Fernando Tatis Jr. But how many of those guys actually turn out to be that? I would say that percentage is really low. I think, like, if you look at the Chris Sale trade and Dombrowski, you know, he gave up a guy in Yoan Moncada. Yoan Moncada is fine. He's a solid, you know, everyday major league player. But would you feel bad about giving up Yoan Moncada for Chris Sale? No. And so I just feel like the prospects have become like overvalued, and it's become this crutch for some of these GMs to just be, well, you can't, you know, you got to have sustainability, got to have a deep farm system, deep organization. You need these prospects. How many of them do you actually need, and how many of them will actually impact your organization in a major, major way?
Right. And, you know, that's the argument for Dave Dombrowski, right? He was really good at that. At knowing which prospects he could trade. I don't think Dombrowski's ever really given up a prospect who's went on to become a superstar. I remember doing the exercise when he was here in Boston, looking at it and say, I couldn't find one. You know, most of the deals that he made, he gave up prospects that went on to be okay, maybe, or nothing, or went on to do nothing. Now his teams have always had high payrolls, so you have to be willing to invest in that. And then you end up having to spend money to cover up holes that you otherwise have, which is where John Henry said, you know what, we're done with this. But he was great at that. And, you know, you might be onto something there. You look at the Angels and what they did in the draft, and the Angels had 30 picks in 30 rounds and drafted 30 pitchers. And it tells me that where we're at as an industry right now in baseball is it's quantity over quality.
Okay.
And the Red Sox have kind of done that too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at what Bloom's done since he got here, he's just anybody who's designated for assignment, anyone who's thrown on the waiver wire, anyone who he could get for cash and give up no prospects, he just takes them. He's like, come on, come over here. We'll try you out. Last year, they tried out everybody. The problem is they didn't really hit on anyone except Felipe Valdez was really the only pitcher they hit on. Nick Pivetta, I guess.
Yeah, Pivetta is, Pivetta, you know, like, for what he is, he's been good.
Yeah. You know? So you hit on a couple, but I think that's what people are looking at right now. You look at the Yankees. you know, they gave up none of their top prospects to get all the guys they got.
Exactly.
They just gave up quantity. They gave up six prospects for Joey Gallo.
Yep. So I'm agree with you 100% on that's what I'm saying. And I think Bloom looks at it and says, oh, we need more depth. And I get that. And I'm all about sustainability, too. And he was my first choice to be the general manager. I know it's chief baseball officer of the Red Sox. And I wanted the Red Sox to adopt some of the Tampa Bay Rays way. But I just sort of think, to your point about misreading this, that there are some, you can do both at the same time. You can rebuild and replenish that prospect pipeline and contend and help your team. And how do we know this is possible in Boston? Theo Epstein did it at the beginning of his tenure. They're very competitive in 03. They win the World Series in 04. But then you see that farm system starts to produce the Papelbons and the Lesters and the Pedroias. So you can do both things. And I thought that's what Theo was masterful at, was being able to identify the prospects you can't move and the ones that maybe the industry is inflating a little bit that you can move on from. And Dave Dombrowski's issue to me was, to your point, he wouldn't give up superstars, but I sort of felt he would willy nilly throw like extra prospects into deals. And I'm like,
yes,
but you could actually use that in another deal. Yeah, I thought that was sort of his problem. But where I'm a little disappointed with Heim is that I feel like he's creating, in my mind, Jason, this false choice between sustainability and the ability to sort of for this team to contend right now. And I know he said in the comments to you guys, basically along the line, I'm paraphrasing, but if you want to, protect the future, you have to, focus on the future. I think he's sort of saying like, oh, well, we had to pick sustainability. Again, to me, that's a false choice. You could have done both. It's possible. We've seen other general managers do it in baseball and in this market.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And that's, we said that this was going to be the trade deadline that reveals who Chaim Bloom is. We didn't know much about him to this point. We knew he came in and had to trade Mookie Betts. He did the best he could. We'll evaluate that trade 5 years from now. That's more on John Henry, Dave Dombrowski. Should they have locked up Mookie earlier? Maybe not. Maybe it's a good deal that they let Mookie go. Maybe he ends up not being great into his 30s. But that wasn't really Bloom's thing. He traded Andrew Benintendi. Maybe that trade doesn't look great. We'll see. That wasn't a huge loss. He hasn't had any big projects. This was his first big project, was to handle this trade deadline, to fill holes on a team that was playing above its head, but was still a first place team that still has arguably the best manager, at least in the American League, who's really managed circles around some other guys with more talented rosters, I thought, for the first few months of the season. Winning close games is always, to me, a sign of a good manager. Winning extra innings games, winning come from behind games. The clubhouse attitude is right. So that's why it's you look at it and you say, did Bloom completely misread the market? Did he misunderstand what he was doing? Was it a false choice? They could have got, Eddie Rosario went to the Braves for nothing. Andrew Haney went to the Yankees for like their 17th or 23rd prospect. Danny Duffy went to the Dodgers for nothing. They could have got guys. They just didn't. So he made it out to be this false choice of it's all or nothing, instead of finding that middle ground of let's help this team. All we gave up is, a pitcher, our ninth best prospect for Kyle Schwarber, who's not even healthy, who doesn't even play a position that we need him to play. It's hard to argue that Chaim had a good trade deadline. I don't think anybody could argue that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, he might end up having the last laugh. You know what's interesting? You mentioned the Benintendi deal. And when I look at that deal, you're right. I mean, Benintendi, it's not like they gave up anything great, but I would say that you gave up a proven everyday major league player, which is what Benintendi is. And we'll see what Josh Winkowski ends up being, the pitcher. I know they really like him. He's at Double A. Looks like he has some good makeup and certainly some good attributes. But it's mind blowing to me that at this point in the season, and while they were in this losing streak, Jason, I'm watching these games against the Blue Jays and I'm like, okay, the first base options are Franchy Cordero and Bobby Dalbec at this point. Yeah. And that sort of point, they are 28th in Major League Baseball, I believe, in OPS from first baseman. Also within that, I guess I'm going to just point out, we just had this whole long conversation about prospects. Well, what were Bobby Dalbec and Michael Chavis? I'm sure at some point that those guys were on the do not give up list, right? And that's kind of my point.
Yeah, no, exactly. And while you're on that topic, because I just looked this up the other day, I thought it was interesting, is the three guys that they've drafted and developed who have appeared this year, Bobby Dalbec, Michael Chavis, and Jaron Duran, have the three lowest contact rates on the team. that the guys they are drafting and developing right now are being developed as all or nothing swing offensive type of players, where even in the minors, they knew that this was Bobby Dalbec's approach. And that was okay. That was kind of celebrated. He was, considered to be doing a great job. Michael Chavis, same thing. You know, Jarren Duran was not that type of player, but all of a sudden in 1 year, he transitions to become that type of player. And suddenly he has more value as this all or nothing guy who had never hit more than 5 homers in the minors, who now has 15 homers in 40 games. But can he make contact? And he comes to the majors and he hasn't. He's made contact at a very low percentage. He's striking out like 40% of the time. So the players that they've actually drafted and developed have not been contact hitters. And so maybe they also misread the way that the game was going, where they were reacting to the way the game went and having these power hitters and not forward thinking of, well, where is it going next? I think that's also an argument you can make, but it is inexcusable. The first base options that they have right now, it is inexcusable to look at the last 4 or 5 guys in their current 26 man roster and say, this is the Boston Red Sox. This is a $200 million team. And these are the guys that are at Alex Cora's disposal right now. Marwin Gonzalez, who hasn't been good in 4 years, Bobby Dalbec, who really doesn't look like a big leaguer. Franchi Cordero does not look like a big leaguer. You know, it's really a shame. I think Alex Cora got a raw deal. He deserves better.
Yeah, you mentioned Franchi Cordero there. Allow me, please, a little Franchi Cordero tangent.
Let's hear it.
Which is,
wait, before we move on,
yes.
I just have to say,
yes,
because you brought up Benintendi, and it's a great point. This team could use Andrew Benintendi right now.
You think so?
They could use, of course. I mean, they can use, is he better than it? Franchi Cordero and Bobby Dalbec?
Oh, definitely. But I mean, but he couldn't play first base, could he? Or
no, but I mean, look, move guys around, right? I mean, Kike clearly can play the infield.
Yes.
You can put Kike anywhere. If you want, okay. I mean, maybe you're wasting him at first base. But you can move guys around. I don't know.
No. I mean, I'm with you overall on Benintendi, and I know he's better in you know the early part of the year before he got hurt. My issue with Franchi Cordero, and he might develop. It's not personal with Franchi, but I thought philosophically that was a telling trade by Haim, because Franchi Cordero is sort of a lottery ticket, and he's one of these guys. If he pans out, it's great because he has tremendous raw skills and tremendous power, and if he can ever put it all together, what a steal. But that's the type of trade that the Rays had to make, because the finished version of Franchi Cordero is outside of their budget. They don't have the money to be able to get that guy. So yep. You have to take a chance on a Franchi Cordero and hope that you can sort of, you know, put him back together again, right? He's sort of like the Humpty Dumpty of hardball. Like, we'll put him back together. And that was really telling to me, because I was like, Haim Bloom, if you're the Red Sox, you don't have to go with such a risky upside guy. You could go with somebody who maybe doesn't have the upside of Franchi, but could help you more now, because down the line with your resources, you'll be able to get the finished version of that player. And so that was a really telling trade to me, where I was sort of like, why are we bringing in the left-handed William Opeña here? You don't have to do that. You don't have to take that big a risk with a guy like Benintendi, who you know is a proven major league player. He didn't have the highest trade value in the world, but I just think you could have gotten something back that maybe could have helped you a little bit more now, you know, and that's right. Something where philosophically I still look at Bloom and I think, is there still maybe a learning curve, an adjustment period to having the resources of the Red Sox? Because as much as I like what the Rays do, Jason, I don't want him to just come here and follow some rote Rays blueprint, because he has some different options here that he didn't have in St. Petersburg.
Exactly. And I think you make a good point about Haim Bloom. We don't want the Rays here. I think general managers, when they come to Boston, really get 2 chances.
Okay.
And I think this year is Haim Bloom's first chance, right? The first year and a half don't really count. He was just picking up the pieces from Dombrowski, trying to figure out what was going on. I was appalled by the roster that they put on the field last year, as I think most Red Sox fans were.
Didn't go well.
Certainly, I mean, just embarrassing. It wasn't just that they weren't winning. It was an embarrassing display of talent on the field. But that doesn't count. This year was Haim Bloom's first year. This was his first chance. And he obviously looked at this team from the beginning and said, we're not really going for it. We're not really not going for it. Let's just see what we can do. Almost every single player he signed in the offseason had an option for 2022. Nothing he did was for 2021, just for 2021. Almost nothing. So he looked at this and said, we're playing for 2022. That's when we're going to start being competitive. Well, again, did he misread his own team, or did he correctly read it and they just aren't that good and they fall apart and win 82 games? it looks to me like we're going to find out if this was his first chance and he burned it, because then all of a sudden there's so much pressure on next year. Okay, well, now Chris Sale's back. Now you've got maybe some guys that were coming off of weird seasons last year that have had 1 year to reset. Maybe now you have some of your prospects are more ready to play. What do you do in 2022? Because if he bombs 2022 as well, now it's like, well, what's he here for?
He's here for sustainability. I think ownership will have more patience with him than they've had with previous general managers, because they bought into the whole sustainability thing. He didn't. But maybe they feel like, and you know what's interesting? It's interesting you mentioned Ben Cherington, because I feel like so far on the GM scale, and look, Ben Cherington won a World Series here, but
yeah.
I thought I was hoping, and it's still possible, but I was thinking philosophically and from the standpoint of aggressiveness that Haim would maybe be closer to Theo Epstein than Ben, who was good, but he was very sort of circumspect, very sort of cautious. You know, he clutched a lot of the prospects. He had a difficult time, I think, sort of distilling, absolutely, you know, who can you move on from? Who can you not move on from? And I think Haim's a little closer to Ben than I thought, but I think the Red Sox buy into the whole sustainability thing. You're around the team more. I mean, you know better than I do, but I think right now, John Henry and Tom Werner, there's always like a buzzword for the Red Sox organization, and sustainability is that. And I think they'll have more patience, and Haim will get more runway than the average Red Sox GM, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I look at Ben, and you know, that was the message when Ben was here too, but they accidentally won a World Series in 2013. really, they just stumbled into it. Phenomenal job by Ben building that team, and then really didn't do anything after that. He got two chances. He got 2014,
it's true,
huge mistake. And then his second chance was 2015, and they fired him in the middle of the season. Basically, they stripped him of all his power and he left, but they fired him. So he got two chances, and that was a sustainability GM. He was a player development guy. That was his whole thing, not trading prospects, right? They could have traded Blake Swihart and Henry Owens for Cole Hamels in his prime, and they didn't. They almost never traded prospects, and so many of them failed. And it's, to me, it's like, if you just wanted Ben Cherington all over again, that's fine. But do you actually want to win? Do you actually believe in this roster? Because a lot of these guys aren't going to be great forever. I mean, they're in their prime right now. Devers, Bogarts, how many good years does JD Martinez have left? You know, these guys are in their prime, and you're wasting them right now. And I think that's why so many fans are upset.
Wow, Jason, that's a great point. And that by the time Haim gets the organization where he wants and he's able to execute his vision and its sustainability and all this other stuff, will you still have Xander Bogaerts, who can be a free agent after 2022? Will you still have some of the core pieces you have now? And will they still be the same players they are? I hadn't really thought of that, but that's interesting, and in that the timelines might not really line up. And that would... wow, that'd be tough to swallow. I guess I was sort of thinking all along that it would be sustainable, but that he was going to build it to maximize the core guys he has now, you know, like Bogarts, and obviously Raffy's younger, but guys like that. And it's kind of scary to think that maybe the timelines won't line up. I want to pivot just quickly to this on Haim, because overall, I think he's done a really good job. I mean, to get the team in this position, you have to give him credit. There were moves I didn't like that have worked out. So I know it sounds like we're being a little rough on him, but I think that's because the team's in a free fall. And I think that has to do with the trade deadline. I think that he sort of undercut all the belief in the team that Alex Cora had built. Yep. And, you know, Haim's a numbers guy. Baseball ops, they're numbers guys. But you can't quantify sometimes hope and belief. And I feel like he sort of undercut that. Do you think that is an element here, like the human side of the game, that these guys were buying in 100%? They're like, we put ourselves in this position. Yeah, yep, we believe, Alex believes. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, the organization doesn't believe in us. The you know, GM doesn't believe, ownership doesn't believe. That's like deflating.
Absolutely. I do 100% buy into it. And anybody who tells me otherwise, I don't believe it, because these are humans. They aren't robots. And I think that's where we've gone wrong in this sport, maybe more than any other sport, is we start analyzing these guys like robots. Okay, well, statistically, they've done this and that. So, you know, the 3-year average of this based on, you know, multiplied times where the game is going, this is our expectation. They aren't robots, they're humans. And when you have Alex Cora as your manager, you have to understand that the big thing that you're going to get is a lot of confidence and momentum based on confidence. And if you blow that, well, now you have a manager who, how is he going to give his guys confidence now? And I think you look at Xander Bogaerts, I think, is always the perfect temperature gauge of this team. I think nobody has an understanding of the clubhouse and a feel for the clubhouse the way Bogaerts does. And you know, last year there were times where he said, you know, it feels so frustrating. We're scoring 6-7 runs a game and losing because the pitching was so bad. And that was telling when he said that. Then last Saturday, that Rays series, the Sunday night game, ahead of the Sunday night game, he said, tomorrow's a must win. I don't know who's pitching, but we really need a good start from him. We have to win this game tomorrow. There's that feeling that they know they don't have enough talent. And how is that not deflating? When they came into the season, the whole reason that Cora got these guys to play, and Cora's big thing, and he does this all the time. He did it in 2018 somehow, which I, looking back, is amazing to think that he did this. He got them to believe that nobody believed in them. They won 108 games, and Alex Cora told them, nobody believes in you. And got them in the clubhouse in Yankee Stadium during the ALDS series and said, people do not think you're going to win this series. What do you guys think? And they go out and play their tails off and win the World Series. He did the same thing this year, but he actually had ammo this year. Nobody believes in you guys.
Yeah.
Nobody does. And then they play their tails off for 3.5 months. And guess what? The front office doesn't believe in you either. So absolutely a derailing momentum moment.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they can get it going and overcome it. And if they're going to get it going, here's an addition that I think we're all counting on here. And that's Chris Sale. Chris Sale is scheduled to make his return after missing more than 2 years with Tommy John surgery on Saturday against the Orioles. He's made 5 rehab starts in the minors, 1.35 ERA, 35 strikeouts, 5 walks. I'm going to bring in Ellen on this too. Are we underselling, Jason, the idea of Chris Sale coming back and what that can do? And are we not maybe giving enough credit to the Red Sox when they tell us there's not a lot of teams that are bringing back a guy like Chris Sale to help them in the second half of the season?
I don't know if we're underselling it. I think he's their last hope. If he's not dominant, they're done, in my opinion. I don't think they have what it takes to come back from this without him. He has to be absolutely dominant. And, you know, his last 2 starts, you could argue he's ready to do it. You know, I thought he made some really interesting comments after Saturday's start where he said, I could have just thrown those innings in the big leagues. And okay. I felt normal for 2 starts in a row. He said I could have just thrown those innings in the big leagues, which is a bigger, again, feeds into the bigger picture of where's the urgency from the front office. I understand you're being careful with Chris Sale. He's your franchise player. He's coming off Tommy John. I get it. But could you have, that was a key moment that Saturday. Could Chris Sale have made that start? Now you're waiting another 7 days for him to start. Why is he not coming back against the Rays series on regular rest?
I was going to ask you that. Yeah, why are they not doing that?
The Rays are terrible against lefties. They stink against lefties. Everybody knows that. They crush righties. And now you have an opportunity to bring one of the best lefties in the game back in this Rays series on regular rest. No, we're going to go with another right-handed pitcher. Who knows who it is? Probably Tanner Houck, I guess, who's another guy they've underutilized this year. It's like that to me is the big picture thing, is just no urgency for this year. None. And yes, Sale needs to save this team. Are we underselling what he could do? Maybe. I think he's their last hope, but he needs to be dominant.
Okay. So in my opinion, I think we're overselling what Sales can do.
Okay.
Pun intended.
Oh, I like it. I like it, Ellen. I didn't even think of that.
I think the Simone Biles of it all, like, really put into perspective, like what you were just saying about how these people are not robots. The entire season is now resting on his shoulders, and he's an older player. He's coming back from an injury. He says he's okay, but he also did recovery during COVID when we all were not mentally okay. I think it's a lot to put on him to basically save the rest of this team. So I just want to know your thoughts. Like, what do you think? I know he hasn't publicly had any issues mental health-wise when it comes to the pressure of the game, but it just seems like that would play a big role in his return.
I think that's a great point. Yeah, we don't know. You know, he's a guy who, I guess, how many times have we seen him in high-pressure situations now? I believe he was bad his first year in the postseason, right?
He got rocked by the Astros. But there might have been a reason for that.
Exactly. And and if you go back and watch the tape, it seems pretty clear they knew it was coming.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
in fairness to Chris Sale.
Yeah, in fairness to Chris Sale, they were cheating. He's been pretty good in pressure situations, hasn't he? I mean, you look at how he pitched in 2018 and really he was injured and still gave them some quality innings in that postseason. He's been pretty good at handling pressure. He said he says all the right things. He says, you know, I'm the guy who's making all the money. I need to be better. He seems pretty good at it. And he's talked a lot about how his diet has changed and he's got this whole new perspective on life after Tommy John. So
you know, it's spend time with his family.
Yes, but it's a great point. How is he going to handle the mental aspect of this? And I think that's why a lot of people said, hey, get another pitcher in here so it's not all on him, because it's absolutely right now all on him.
Yeah, I think it is a great point by Alan. You know what's interesting? Maybe it goes the other way, though. Like, just listening to him talk, maybe that time off that he had, and he's such an intense guy, that time away from baseball and realizing there's more things in life than baseball. Like, he talked about being a dad and being around for his kids and all that stuff. Maybe it gives him a different perspective, and it sort of allows you to say, oh, this isn't life or death. This is just baseball, you know? So it's a great question by Ellen. We'll see how he ends up handling it. Mental concerns. Yeah, I think that's legitimate. And also, I think anytime we talk about Chris Sale, I think physical concerns too. I mean, this is a guy who has a tendency to break down, and obviously the workload will be reduced this year because he's not pitching the whole season, and that could work in the Red Sox favor. But at the same time, as they always say, right, it's not how many pitches you throw, it's the pressure on you, to Ellen's point, and the intensity to execute that you need of those pitches. And sometimes that can take it out of you. And I thought it was interesting, Jason, that in his last rehab start, he didn't make it five innings. And I'm not condemning him for that. But the reality is, if the Red Sox are getting a guy back that can only go 4 1/3, 5 innings, 5 1/3, that will help them. But they're still going to have the same issues of trying to piece the rest of it together.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think it's more of an energy thing than anything else. Okay. I think it's, we got Sale on the mound today. And how, there's no other better feeling if you're a Red Sox hitter than knowing we've got Chris Sale on the mound today. And it doesn't matter who we're facing, because Sale's on the mound. And yeah, he's not going to be 7-8 innings like he used to. And really, you know, that kind of changed anyways, because the game just changed and the approach is different, how you handle pitchers and the offensive approach, getting guys out of games and all that. But if he just gives you 5 or 6 innings that are Chris Sale innings, I think that's what you need. You just need the energy more than you do the actual, well, he's got to go 8, you know, just give us 5 or 6 and be Chris Sale. And I think the Red Sox are going to look like a different team behind it.
Yeah. He's kind of, and maybe this is what Heim Bloom's banking on. Again, out of fairness here, let's look at the other side of the coin. We've talked about Heim not making the moves at the trade deadline and that deflating the team, but maybe he's banking on Chris Sale coming back and elevating the team. And these guys know Sale. They know what he can do. He's very popular in the clubhouse. He's obviously one of the best pitchers in baseball when he's right. Maybe he's banking on that and saying, okay, there's no other pitcher I can acquire that's going to have that same effect on my team. Now, having to wait at the end of the day, it might, you know, cost him, Jason, that basically they had to wait 2 weeks between the trade deadline and when Sale makes his debut. That could end up being sort of the inflection point for the season where everything went south, but maybe that's part of the plan.
I mean, I'm looking at the calendar. Okay. I got the Red Sox calendar. Right, let me see that. Okay. Here's what they decided to do. They've got the Blue Jays, the Rays, the Orioles, the Yankees. Okay. These are huge, huge games.
Yes.
And they said, you know what? We don't have Chris Sale coming back to the middle of August. Our only addition is going to be another guy who's not going to come back to the middle of August. So we've got them a critical portion of our schedule here. 1, 2, 3, 4. They had a doubleheader, about 10 games. If you include, actually, you include the July 31st, 11, 12 games against key division rivals that they said, no, you know what? We'll wait for Sale. We'll wait for Schwarber to get hurt. I mean, this could go down to the wire. They could end up, you know, they're probably not going to win the division now. I think they're going to need a miracle to do that. But even just to make the wild card, I mean, it could be a one game difference. And they were just too patient. I said, well, we're just going to play the patient game. We'll wait for Sale. Well, you just had 2 weeks that might have been the most critical 2 weeks of the season, and you failed the test.
Be interesting to see. They're certainly going to have to make some hay right now with the they have 12 of their next 15 at home. You're playing 3 last place teams in the American League. I think for 9 of those games, you face the Orioles, the Rangers, and the Twins. They need to make some hay here to make sure they make the playoffs.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, this is they don't have much time. You know, if they have another bad week or two, it's all over, because the Yankees have so much momentum right now. The Blue Jays look, oh my God, they look so confident. I mean, coming back from a 7-2 deficit to the Red Sox at home, the Springer home run, they got Springer back now. I mean, the Blue Jays just look confident. They look scary.
Yeah.
So there's not much time for the Red Sox to figure this out.
That's what works against the Red Sox. They are in a very, very good division, very competitive, really, with four teams that are sort of playoff caliber, and they're not all going to make it. So we'll see where the Sox go from here. I'm sure after listening to me and Jason talk about them, you feel much better about the state of the 2021 Red Sox. It was all rainbows and sunshine on this podcast.
That's right. This team's going to win it all. No questions asked.
That's what happens when you get two columnists together. You know, we tend to be opinionated, and sometimes those opinions, you know, they lean a little bit negative. But we'll see. This is where the rubber meets the road. So thanks for meeting with us, Jason. We really appreciate it. It was great to have you on to lend your insight to the Sox. Tell everybody where they can find your work.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Always good to chat with you, man. You can read my stuff in the Boston Herald or follow me on Twitter at JMasterDonato or listen to the podcast, the Locked On Red Sox podcast, pretty new podcast I just started with Lauren Campbell from Nesson. So we talk about the Red Sox a lot, and maybe we'll have to get you on, Chris.
I would love to reciprocate, man. I would love to come on, and I hope that podcast is going well for you. If it's anything like, which I haven't listened yet, to be honest, I have to do that. But if it's anything like the heat you brought on this one, then I'm sure it's very, very good.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Jason Mastrodonato, columnist from the Boston Herald. Join us here on the Take 5 podcast. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.